creation, O Lord.
For the days were completed for the purification, according to the law of Moses, Mary and Joseph took Jesus up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. Just as it is written in the law of the Lord, and the male opens the womb shall be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer sacrifice a pair of turtles or two young pigeons, according to the dictate of the law of the Lord. Now there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simon. This man was righteous and devout, waiting the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. And he revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he should not see death before he seen Christ of the Lord. For he came in the Spirit into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus, who performed the custom of the law in regard to him, he took him in his arms and blessed God, saying, "Now, Master, you may let your servant go in peace according to your word. For my eyes have seen your salvation, in which you prepared in the sight of all people, a light and revelation to the Gentiles, and glory for your people Israel." The child's father and mother was amazed at what was said about him, and Simon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, "Behold, this child is destined for the fall and rise of many in Jerusalem, and to be a sign that will be contradicted, and you yourself a sword will pierce, that the thoughts of your many hearts may be revealed." There was also a prophet, Anna, daughter of Caleb, of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in age, and Anna lived 7 years with her husband after their marriage, and then as a widow until she was 84. He never left the temple, but worshiped night and day with fasting and prayer. And coming to forward at that very time, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child, to all who were waiting the redemption of Jerusalem. When they had fulfilled all the prescriptions of the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own town of Nazareth. The child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of God was upon him. The gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. "Father," the man said, I don't want to die." One of the great privileges of the church's work and ministry, one of the great privileges of the holy priesthood, is the opportunity that I have, Father George, and that several others who assist us in care of the sick and the elderly have, to be with those nearest death. Some face it very bravely. Some very piously. But this fella, he was just honest. "I'm scared. I'm not very religious. I don't know how much of this I actually buy, but I figure about now, somebody like you is probably the best shot I got." Happened just a day or so before I left for Africa, so I carried that fellow with me all on the trip. I'll probably carry him with me forever, because he was probably more honest in facing death than many of us are or will be. He was disappointed, you see, in the course of his life. Now, if I could give you the list of accomplishments this guy has, like what you would read on his resume or what was probably published in his obituary while I was gone, you would have wanted this guy's life. He was successful, made a lot of money. He raised kids that he's really proud of. And he didn't do anything wrong in the strong sense. Never cheated on his wife. Probably didn't even cheat on his taxes. But there was something missing. And he knew that there was something missing. And that something missing led him to the end of his life. And rather than living in hope of what was to come, he lay in fear, unsure and afraid. Most of us don't face death, either our own or other people's, each day. Those are kind of rare moments for most of us, and thanks be to God for it. But we all of us have to face this tension between disappointment on the one hand and hope on the other every day. Hope and disappointment are two poles of our lives that tug at us. And sometimes, even in the course of an hour, we can move from hope to disappointment and back again. One of the great struggles when stepping into another world, another culture, Steph and Earl can certainly tell you about this, people run on different timetables. And so all the expectations we have about what's going to happen next and what's not going to happen next, it gets you all discombobulated. Literally, your hat can fly off. The problem is, of course, that we're placing our hope or our security in the wrong kinds of things. When it comes down to it, what most of us really want is some measure of control over our lives and the feeling that we really are able to call the shots. Maybe not that we get everything that we ever want, but that we can at least avoid the things that we want least. That we can keep at bay our greatest fears and anxieties and hold on to maybe the one or two things that we really think reasonably we can accomplish in the course of a lifetime. Something come and threaten that, and suddenly we get real cranky real quick. And that's a problem. Because it's only in the face of our greatest disappointments, it's only when confronted by our biggest worries and our deepest anxieties, it's only when we face the possibility of the most devastating loss imaginable, only then are we finally in the space where God can enter in. The lesson today from the prophet Malachi recalls just such a time. It's a weird reading. And then will come to the temple the Lord whom you seek. For a Jew in the Old Testament, if the Lord is not in the temple, where in the hell is he? Literally, where in the hell would he be if he's not in the temple? God lives in the temple. How can the one who lives there come there? You're beginning to see why the presentation of the Lord is so important here. This isn't like what we do with our babies when we bring them for baptism. It's not even like what happens when pious couples take their baby afterwards and visit the altar of the lady. It's not a dedication. No. No, the reason the presentation of the Lord matters is because the baby who's brought into the temple is God. The God who ordered the construction of the temple. The God who allowed it to be destroyed and its glory to be carried off into exile. The God who permitted the Ark of the Covenant, which bore God's presence, to disappear. That God came back to the temple, not in glory, not robed as a priest, as a baby, squawking in his diaper, nursing at his mother's breast. You want to know what glory looks like? Find the most humble person in the room. That's why it's usually a baby or a kid. This is especially important in a time and a place like ours, when we're confronted by so much that could very reasonably disappoint us. We are in a moment as a nation and as a people that brings great heartache to pretty much everyone, just for different reasons. This isn't simply a statement about politics, though for us here in Iowa, especially right now, politics enters in a pretty direct way. But it's about something much bigger than just who the next president's going to be. In fact, the reason that we have so much anxiety and animosity in having conversations about who the next president is going to be is because things are so screwed up. Because we've lost the ability to have reasonable conversations with each other about the things that we care about most and about which we disagree the most. It's okay to have disappointments. In fact, if you want to be like a healthy, well-adjusted adult, you need some, or you're going to be kind of broke on the inside. You need to have known heartache and frustration. You need to have had at least some of your hopes dashed to be able to tell the difference between the things that really matter and the things that don't. But that is different, qualitatively different, categorically different than shutting myself off from conversation so that I can avoid being disappointed again. The bishops have asked us to try and approach the next election cycle differently than we have in the past. There's a packet in the bulletin about this, and I really do encourage you to read it. And if right now you're saying to yourself, he's doing it again, damn it, the church always does this, they want to get into politics, then you're the one that needs to read it. If that's where you are, this was written for you. I promise. And it won't tell you who to vote for. It will tell you where your heart needs to be if you want to vote ethically. And that is very different than giving someone an answer, but it will not allow us to stay simply in the silos of disappointment that allow us to support ourselves and one another in the things that we're already sure we're always right about all the time. Any movement which serves to isolate me from other people and from ideas that are different than mine or positions that I disagree with is unworthy of a Christian. It doesn't mean you have to take on every fight that comes your way, but if you're avoiding the fight because you don't want to get hurt, or you don't want to be disappointed again, or because you can't live with and love people that you disagree with, you're not worthy of the name. What the church is calling us to is simply civility. To be able to talk to the person with whom we disagree most and love them best, not least. When the Jews were hauled off into exile, the people that literally destroyed their temple, the ones who took the glory of the Lord away, they didn't shut off conversation with them. You remember the sons of the Maccabees? The seven sons and their mother who got brought before the king? He tried to convince them to eat what was forbidden by the law. And what they didn't do is say, you know what? We're Jews. We're just going to go do our Jewy thing and you do your thing. They listened. And then they responded. And the king, because he was a genuinely bad man, he said, look, if you don't eat this stuff, I'm going to murder you. And they said, that's fine. You can murder us. It's not going to change our minds. God's told us what we have to do. Our conscience can't be moved. You do what you have to do. We do what we have to do. They didn't call him names. They didn't make him feel bad because he had a different idea. They didn't even condemn him strictly. They just condemned his bad actions. How different is that than what we hear on the news? I gotta tell you, the best part about being in Africa, no Wi-Fi. What the bishops have asked us to reflect on, what the packet's for in the bulletin, and what I, as your pastor, really want you to think about, especially if you're going to caucus, are these three things. Civility. The word civility comes from the Latin civis, which literally means city. It's how people who live together get along together. On the trip, you know, I'm basically living with, for 2 weeks, several people who don't usually live with a priest, and so they get to ask all the questions you've always wanted to know but were afraid to ask. What's the most frequent thing or surprising thing you hear in the confessional, Father? You'd probably be surprised. Road rage. Road rage comes up all the time. And I think there's a reason. When you think about what happens when we get angry on the road, we're each in our own little car. It's like a cubicle on wheels. Something happens outside of us, and if we're alone in the car, we will say and do things we would never do if someone was sitting next to us, especially like our wife or our husband. Turns out you guys know how to swear even better than we do. What I tell people to do when they come and confess it is, when somebody really makes you angry on the road, you do not say a word until you can visualize the person that you're yelling at in the passenger seat. Then if you can see them, say whatever it is you have to say. That's what civility is about. It's about how to be together. How to disagree together. Even how to be angry or disappointed together. But to stay together. And not let the disappointment or the frustration or the angst or the anger put us at perpetual odds. It is not an insult to disagree with another human being. In fact, to stay in conversation with somebody that we disagree with is actually an exercise in respect. I don't bother to talk to people whose opinions I don't care about. Think about that next time you turn on your news channel of choice or open your favorite magazine or webpage. Clarity. This one's really important, and this is where the church brings the most to bear. We've got to be really, really clear about those things that we're saying that are sort of absolute values and those things that we say that are prudential. First, because in prudential matters, we all make mistakes all the time. Think about the last time you went to the grocery store. Honey, you were supposed to get the baking powder. You mean baking soda is not the same thing? But it's about more than just allowing for us to be wrong about some things and insisting that we can be right about others. It's about being really, really clear what's at stake, what it is we're fighting for as a Christian people, which is and will be different than any political party in any nation ever. Parties can only ever be interested in the present moment, the current national situation. The church always has to be concerned with something bigger, which is why in every political situation, but especially in a two-party system like our own, we should never feel altogether at home. If you're super comfortable right now as either a Republican or a Democrat, you're doing Catholic wrong. Clarity means acknowledging where my deepest identity is. And it is in something much deeper, more profound, and more lasting than who's going to get elected next. Compassion. Compassio literally means to suffer with. Now think about this for a sec. The only reason we bother to get angry about things is either because we're suffering or because we perceive somebody else is suffering. Otherwise, there'd be nothing to be upset about. Which means every time you encounter someone who's mad, underneath it, they're really hurting. Have you ever encountered an injured person on the street or a sick person in the hospital and just tried to yell them into submission? It's not gonna work. That has literally never worked in the whole history of sick or injured people. I don't know why you would expect it to work in the history of angry people. Anger is a gift from God, which enables us to overcome injustice and suffering. But when we relish in it, when we delight in it, when we deliberately amp ourselves up because we like the feeling of being righteously angry about the thing that we're sure is most important, you might be right about whatever it is you're fighting about, and you may lose your soul in the process. You can win an argument, or you can save your soul. Why then would the bishops ask us to reflect on this weekend? Well, part of it's because, here in Iowa, caucuses. It's true. But if in the providence of God, he should make this sort of peculiar feast fall today, and here in Iowa, we should be called to this very particular political process today, then there's got to be a reason for us today to reflect on this. Where do I place my hope? And what is it that ultimately I will allow to disappoint me? The two old people in today's gospel had seen the absolute worst that their country had to offer. However bad you might think things are now, it can get worse. Just read a little history or a little Bible. And yet, neither of them would allow themselves to be defined by the disappointment which they had known. Far from it. When Simeon caught sight of the baby, he said the words which the church puts on our lips in the moment of our death. Lord, now you let your servant go in peace Your word has been fulfilled. My own eyes have seen the salvation that you promised to your people Israel. Our hope has to be in something more. And it's only when we've grasped that something more, when we've seen it with our eyes and touched it with our hands, that we can hope to make any kind of a decision, politically, personally, or in the church. And if we're not in a place right now where we can look with our eyes and touch with our hands the word of life, then we shouldn't be trying to do anything else. It will be doomed to failure. So ask yourselves tonight what you hope for, what you really, really hope for. And if the Lord were to come tonight and make himself known to you the way he made himself known here, if he were to come to this temple and show his glory here, would you even be able to recognize him? Or would you be able to go in peace? It's an important question, because whether you realize it or not, whether you choose to recognize it or not, it's about to happen.